Philistines, and still the Jews took refuge in the temple as a last resort to fight to the last man. And he just had it with him, and he was so put out when he finally defeated him that he ordered that the temple be completely torn down, not one stone left upon another, word for word what Jesus had prophesied.
Now there are some who would say, well, see, that was the fulfillment of all of these prophecies, and now we're just living in the age of wonder, the millennial age. We don't have any more of these things. They were all fulfilled in A.D. 70, and from now on, the kingdom of God is here, and every day and in every way, things are getting better and better. That's a very popular theological teaching these days.
Well, it not only ignores the fact that the disciples asked him also about the end of the age, and that Jesus, in his answer, talks about the end of the age and his second coming. So the answer there is pretty clear.
Well, I think it is. We still have those things to look forward to. And friends, you have something further to look forward to, and that's further broadcasts between us and Lou Clemenson. You're not going to want to miss those. The War to End All Wars. Get a copy of his great book. Your gift of $10 or more to Save America Ministries will put it in your hands. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Become a partner with us as day after day we're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour, wooing and warning to prepare you so that you truly are not left behind. Thanks for joining us. And send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. God bless you, and let's get ready.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the...
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. Jerome Corsi, who got his Ph.D. at Harvard, and, of course, he's a journalist, he's a writer, he is a frequent guest on our program, and we always enjoy having him here. He's got two books out now. One is America for Sale. The other is Why Israel Can't Wait, and we thought we'd talk about America for Sale, but if we run out of things, we can get into why Israel can't wait as far as the coming attack on Iran. When it's coming, I don't know, but I have no question. The way the media is manipulating the American people, and certainly, oh, the Iranians are terrible and the government is terrible, that's absolutely true. I mean, they are certainly an autocratic government that we put in power back in 1979, but nobody will talk about that. And we've covered for their crimes ever since then, because there seems to be a time plan, and this is the time for a war with Iran. But we don't want to get into that. We want to hear what Dr. Jerome Corsi has to say about America for Sale. Good evening, Jerry. How are you?
Great, Dr. Stan. Great to be back with you. Thank you.
Well, it's always good to have you here. And so why don't you tell us about this new book that's come out? Apparently it's doing very well.
Doing extremely well. I'm very pleased. It's been climbing the charts on Amazon.com. It's right up there in the nonfiction category, right at the top. And it's doing very well in the stores. I'm hopeful it'll be another bestseller. And I'm very grateful to people for their interest in it, including you, Dr. Stan, for the program tonight.
Well, I want you to tell our listeners about what's going on, because people really have no idea really what's happening financially. Certainly the government's doing everything they can to tell us the lie. Oh, things are better. Everything's getting better. Why we're not losing as many jobs as we used to. Of course, they don't mention that we're not getting any new jobs, but things are doing real well. General Motors is opening new plants. They don't mention they happen to be in China and in India, and certainly Ford's opening new plants and going to create lots of jobs, and of course that's in China and India too, but you go right ahead.
Well, that's then you're right on theme. I mean, I start America for Sale with a quote from the very first sections here with Henry Kissinger, who was, he wrote an article, an editorial in the International Herald Tribune earlier this year, in which he said the international economic crisis was an opportunity to create a new world order. In other words, the world economy is globalized, and what Henry Kissinger was saying was we need now a global governance structure to manage the global economy. Translated, that means that the United Nations, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the World Trade Organization, they should be the governing structures, and the United States of America, as a participant in the World Trade Organization, should be secondary, not sovereign, but secondary to the determinations of the World Trade Organization. And as I point out, the globalism is both from the left and the right. On the political left, the idea is, and this is right on page 12, so I make these points right at the beginning of the book. On the left, the ideas have always been, of course, workers of the world unite. So open borders permit the Democrats on the far left to say, let's bring in an underclass from Mexico, Hispanic, illegally, and they'll be the next generation of voters for the Democratic Party, with social welfare benefits provided by the government.
And, of course, what we're doing is certainly lowering the living standards of the American people intentionally. Well, I remember that article in the International Herald Tribune very well. Of course, Henry Kissinger sort of laid it out very clearly. The nations of the world will have to turn over their sovereignty to this new international financial order or face chaos.
That's exactly right, Dr. Pan. And the idea with the open borders is to import from the left a underclass from Mexico that will be government dependent, and of course it has to be brought in illegally, because if from the left's point of view if the borders were closed, if we kept out the drug dealers, the criminal gangs, the terrorists, and even if we let in the same number of Hispanics, it wouldn't serve the left's purposes, because they'd be able to compete legally for jobs. Illegally, the Hispanics can be paid less, they can be given no benefits, and how are they going to complain? They're illegal. So the only recourse the illegal Hispanics have is to go to government benefits. And from the political right, there's also a move towards globalism. We've got the David Rockefellers of the world who say, my corporations are in 35 countries. So you, the United States of America, your laws, your currencies are speed bumps. And I want one world government, one world currency, and my multinational corporation wants the ability to get the cheapest labor wherever it is in the world, even if that's slave labor or near slave labor in China or India. And so from both the left and the right, The move is the same, and the losers are the middle class. As we export millions of jobs to India and China, and we import an underclass that lowers wages in the lesser skilled job categories, the winners are the globalists, the multi-millionaires, billionaires, the Goldman Sachs, the investment bankers, the Henry Paulsons of the world from Goldman Sachs, Secretary of the Treasury under George W. Bush, who made hundreds of millions of dollars with trade missions to China, exporting jobs to China. I think Henry Paulson was really Mr. China. And I quote George Soros extensively in my chapter, Meet the Globalists in America for Sale. And here George Soros, billionaire, leftist supporting Barack Obama in 2008. Of course, George Soros hedged his bets. He also supported John McCain in 2005. And Soros
hold that thought for just a minute as we bring all of our stations back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Dr. Corsi is simply talking about on the left you have the people who want to bring in all the illegal aliens. And why do they want to bring them in illegally? Why? Because then they will have no rights. They can't organize. They have to accept low-paying jobs here in the United States that ordinarily would be available for our own workers because of increasing the shortage of jobs. But, of course, our own workers can't compete because the illegal people who've been allowed intentionally and purposely to come in illegally now can take those jobs, and certainly they are willing to work for much lower levels because pay levels, because they don't dare complain because they're here illegally. That was done intentionally. And then, of course, on the right, why you have David Rockefeller, who has factories and I don't know how many corporations and businesses and dozens of countries throughout the world, and of course they want slave labor, they want to get the cheapest labor, and but they're all globalists. And of course he talks about George Soros, a multi-billionaire, you know, who backed Barack Obama, brought him to power. The people on the right certainly want world government. The people on the left want world government. And the average individual scratches his head and says, I don't understand what's going on, but you pick up the story, Jerry.
And to continue with George Soros, Dr. Stan, I also then follow Soros and making money in the international crisis economically. So George Soros tells the London Daily Mail in March 2009 that this is a very good international economic crisis for me. And if you look at the numbers, George Soros, who came out of retirement in 2007 to manage again his quantum investment fund, Soros has made $2.9 billion since 2007, $1 billion since 2008, largely betting against the dollar and the U.S. economy. Of course, Soros made his original billion betting against the pound in Great Britain. So the globalists, the investment bankers, they're not going to lose economically in selling out the sovereignty of the United States to world trade organizations or in compromising the middle class of the United States. So U.S. wealth is redistributed not only internally in the United States itself with social welfare programs on a scale never seen before since Franklin Roosevelt, but also internationally as we implement cap and trade and other agreements in Copenhagen and this meeting in December, where we are going to be under UN taxes. We'll have if the Obama administration wins, we'll have a cap and trade legislation which will be detrimental to U.S. businesses, any coal producing electrical plants, any homes, middle class or otherwise, that are paying heating and cooling bills from electric companies using coal, which is about almost everyone in the United States. And globally, through the UN-administered Copenhagen Protocol, which will impose an international cap-and-trade tax on U.S. businesses, redistributing U.S. wealth not only in the United States, but now internationally. So when you look at the goal here, the winners are the investment bankers, the Goldman Sachs of the world, the losers of the middle class. And that's really the definition of globalism worldwide. Eventually the whole world, including the United States, looks like Mexico. The very wealthy people at the top, and the vast majority of the people, not middle class, but struggling for daily existence and largely poor.
And I really think this is what's so vitally important, that the average American out there in the listening audience has to listen to what Dr. Corsi is saying, because there is an organized effort to destroy the middle class. Certainly they wanted to destroy our industrial base, not only by actively shipping our jobs overseas, but by driving up the cost of electricity so that we will not be able to compete. American manufacturers are going to have to move overseas where they can buy cheap electricity because they're allowed to have nuclear power. We can't have it here. Oh, my goodness, you know, why? What would we do with the spent fuel rods? We can't We can't reprocess them like they do in other countries. No, we got to bury them underground in Nevada, except the judge won't let us, because we don't know what's going to happen 250 million years from now. We only know what's going to happen 10 million years from now. And so that's why we can't bury those fuel rods. I mean, all the arguments that are given are ridiculous. But this is, cap and trade has nothing to do with global warming. It has everything to do with an effort to destroy the industrial base of this country and impoverish our people. Would that be a fair estimate?
That's exactly what I write in America for Sale. Cap and trade is an ideological agenda. It's a globalist agenda. And, Dr. Sen, I do a lot of analysis of our deficits and our budget. On page 24 of the book, I analyze in America for Sale the gap accounting of the Federal Treasury in terms of the U.S. balance sheet. And if you take a look at page 24, we are $65.5 trillion, with a T, negative net worth. In other words, our unfunded liabilities to Social Security, to Medicare, and to Medicaid right now, before we add a couple more $1 trillion of unfunded liabilities to universal health care, and who knows how many trillions that will be, but $65.5 trillion liabilities unfunded. There is no Social Security lockbox, like Al Gore argued in the 2000 debate with George W. Bush. The Social Security Trust Fund has been robbed by Democratic Congresses for decades to fund other programs that the Democrats couldn't fund any other way. So when you look in the Social Security Trust Fund, what you get is IOUs. Not money, but IOUs. To get a real idea of what America for Sale means and a graphic image a person can get a hold of, I'm saying that when person gets their Social Security check next month, maybe we should print at the bottom of it, provided to you courtesy of the government of Communist China. Because the United States is bankrupt. Unless we were able to borrow money from China in the amount of over $100 billion a month, we could not fund the federal government. Social Security and other government welfare benefits could not be paid. And I think the American people are just beginning to wake up to the fact that we are increasingly dependent on foreign nations, China, Japan, to buy our debt. Otherwise, the federal government couldn't operate.
And I really think this is vitally important. People have to understand that we have a Medicare Trust Fund. We have a Social Security Trust Fund. What's in them? IOUs from a government that doesn't have any money. Well, I mean, would you want to, of course, somebody said, well, you know, you don't have to worry. I have my rich relative has lots of money, and I'm going to borrow you, but I am backed by the full faith and credit of my uncle. Well, of course, then you look at the uncle's account. Uncle doesn't have any money. He's living on borrowed money. And how long can he keep borrowing money? Because if he can't borrow money, then the fellow that you are certainly getting things from is not going to be able to continue giving you money. And this is what Social Security and Medicare are. They're both Ponzi schemes, but this is what Bernie Madoff found. You know, when you don't have enough coming in to cover what's going out, why, at that point, the game's all over. And what do? Why, you send Bernie Madoff to prison for 150 years. What are we going to do with the congressmen and the senators who knowingly and intentionally have been running a Ponzi scheme for, half a century, knowing full well it was never going to work, that one day the day of reckoning was coming, the day is here, and there isn't any money in the trust fund, simply IOUs from a bankrupt treasury. So go right ahead, Jerry.
Well, Dr. Sen, you're exactly right. I mean, this is the problem Americans have got to understand, that the dollar, I read a whole chapter in America for Sale, and that is the plan to destroy the dollar. Not happening. It's not accidental. The Federal Reserve, the Treasury, the White House knows exactly what we're doing. There's no way we can pay $65 trillion in unfunded liabilities and imagine we can take over one-sixth or one-seventh of the economy in health care without adding to those unfunded liabilities more trillions. And the dollar is completely debased. So the only way those benefits are going to be paid out is if the dollar is monetized. In other words, the dollar will be deeply devalued, and in the process, when people get their $1,000 Social Security check, not only will it say, paid to you courtesy of the government of Communist China, good luck buying a sandwich and a cup of coffee with $1,000. That's the problem. And I show in the chapter the plan to destroy the dollar. I start with economist Robert Mundell at Columbia. Now, he's not just an academic economist. Robert Mundell is the father of the euro. It's his idea to create the euro. Robert Mundell is a chief architect of the one-world currency we're about to realize.
But, of course, the thing is that the only way to pay back the $65 trillion we owe is to pay it back with money that has very little value. And to pay it back, you know, you have to get the value of the dollar down far enough, then you can pay it back, and you can smile and say, see, I paid you back. And then, of course, as Dr. Corsi said, yeah, but you can't buy anything with the money. And what we're talking about is destroying the pensions and the insurance policies and the value of the bonds, and suddenly the life savings of the average American. There's not one person in 1,000 who really believes this could happen, but it's happening today. Go right ahead, Jerry.
Well, then to pick this up, so in the chapter I write in America for Sale on the
gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Apparently, Barack Obama has agreed to that. In fact, we're even going to help to fund the creation of special drawing rights under the International Monetary Fund. And nations are going to put up $250 million, something like that, to begin to establish these special drawing rights as an alternative to the American currency. Now, whether that'll be it, or certainly there's a lot of talk about the so-called BRIC nations and France and the Arab nations wanting a currency that's backed by oil and gold, and I don't know which way it's going. But we do know that our leaders are traitors to our country because they don't believe in our sovereignty. To take away the currency of a nation, you've destroyed the sovereignty of that nation. And since the dollar is the reserve currency of the world, and our leaders are intent upon destroying that. Of course, they can't tell the common people what's going on because they don't understand globalism. They want sovereignty, they want freedom, they want a constitution. But our leaders have a different agenda. And basically, they are moving to undercut the foundation of our dollar, to lower its value. And by so doing, they will sort of steal everything everybody spent their whole life working for. And the average individual cannot believe these things are happening. And, well, as long as there's beer and there's Monday night football, why be concerned? Everything's going to work out all right. Or is it, Jerry?
Well, this is the problem, Dr. Stan, is we undermine the sovereignty of the United States. We're going under international control. Now, in the chapter in America for Sale entitled Meet the Globalists, one of the people I profile is Zbigniew Brzezinski. Now, Brzezinski was one of the founders of the Trilateral Commission. He was a foreign policy advisor, one of the major ones to President Jimmy Carter. He advised candidate Barack Obama and has advised President Barack Obama as well. Now, I go into the writing of Brzezinski, and I look at his books, and I give you the footnotes and the citations that I quote Brzezinski's books, in which Brzezinski basically argues that the United States emerging as a superpower, especially after the fall of the Berlin Wall, should not exert our authority or our influence to settle international conflicts or to determine U.S. foreign policy by the interests of the United States alone. We should submit to international control, such as the United Nations. Now, if you want to see the influence of Brzezinski, I track it through to President Obama, who recently speaks to the United Nations and to the General Assembly, refuses to acknowledge American exceptionalism. We're just another country. The French like France, the Sudanese like Sudan. So what's so special about the United States? And Barack Obama on his apology tour seems not to have any pride or understanding of Ronald Reagan's shining city on the hill or the idea that the United States has a constitutional structure that is unique in the history of the world to protect liberty and freedom, limited government, and a constitutional republic. And then President Obama goes to chair the Security Council, the first U.S. president ever to chair a U.N. Security Council. Now, is this, Dr. Sand, the beginning of the United States president having to go to the United Nations to determine what the United States should do with Iran or with Afghanistan? And why are we turning to the United Nations? The United Nations is dominated by small countries and dictatorships. Is an equal platform in the General Assembly to President Obama and to Ahmadinejad of Iran, who is denying the Holocaust, pursuing the development of nuclear weapons, and threatening the continued existence of Israel? How can the United Nations have a moral platform on which to determine U.S. foreign policy? Yet this is what the globalists intend, and it's how, with the demise of the dollar, with the entire intellectual thrust towards saying the United States as a nation state is an antiquity, we need to get beyond it to a global view, then Brzezinski's idea is manifested and President Obama is submitting the United States authorities to the Security Council.
And this is an idea that has been around for a long period of time, really for thousands of years. This idea of bringing about a one world government, a new secular order, or as listed on the back of the dollar bill inscribed beneath the Great Pyramid, Novo Ordo Seclorum, the new social order, the new world order. And of course that phrase, these emblems there have been around for 5,000 years. But what are they doing on the back of the dollar bill? Beneath the caption, "In God We Trust," What God are they talking about? We'll be back in just a moment here. And, of course, Kate Smith was singing about a different America, an America, of course, that where people were proud to be in America, where people throughout the world looked to America for moral leadership and for suddenly these concepts of freedom, but unfortunately most Americans have forgotten what freedom's really all about. It's not the ability to do what you want to do, but do what you should do, according to God's laws. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening, Jerry Corsi, we're talking about his book, America for Sale. Jerry, how can people get to your website? How can people get copies of your book? And certainly not only that book, but your other books and your other exciting book, which, of course, is Israel Can't Wait.
Well, Dr. Stan, my books are on Amazon.com. Simon & Schuster is the publisher. We've made sure the books are at deep discount on Amazon.com. The books are in the bookstores all across the United States, Barnes & Noble, as well as Borders, independent bookstores, various stores, including Walmart across the country. The books are available generally. Also, I have WorldNet Daily has books with I've signed with the book plates, and I did something this time differently with America for Sale. If you take a look at AmericaForSaleBook.com, AmericaForSaleBook.com, I went into Simon & Schuster in New York and actually hand-signed a limited collectible edition of books that are available at a slight premium on AmericaForSaleBooks.com. A company called Premier Collectibles did that this time. It's the first time I've done that. So the books are available in a variety of outlets, and WorldNet Daily, where I'm a senior staff reporter, is Dr. Stan, where most people can find all the time the writings I'm doing on an almost daily basis.
And I suggest you read Dr. Corsi's articles, because they're full of wisdom, and he's right on these issues. Our telephone number, if you have a question or comment, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And give us a call if you have a question for Dr. Corsi. But we don't want a lot of comments. But if you have a question, something you want answered, because we are certainly in the most unusual financial times in our nation's history. And the America we have known will never be the same again. I can tell you that whatever happens, we're not going to back the way it was. The dollar is going to lose its preeminence. The middle class is largely going to be wiped out, as Dr. Corsi has said. We're moving rapidly towards what they have in Mexico. They have a large ruling class. Then they have a military and a police force to keep the people in line. And then they have a few professionals there in the middle class. And then a large underclass, people impoverished, suddenly hoping to have an opportunity to go north of the border where there's opportunity. But those opportunities will soon be gone, because so will all of our industries. Everything is being done to destroy the industrial base of this nation, and that which we haven't already shipped overseas will be forced, much of it, to leave, because we're going to drive up the cost of electricity and everything else. And if you're in an area of the country where you have to have, you know, air conditioning to make life tolerable, I can tell you the price of electricity is going up. We're stressing electric cars, but you probably won't be able to afford the electricity to charge your car, because the price is going to be going so very high. Everything is being done to block the production of cheap electricity, because green electricity, wind power, solar power, are prohibitively expensive. So, Jerry, what are some of the other issues that should be raised here?
I do discuss energy at length in the America for Sale, and point out that we're now 60% dependent on foreign oil, which is another America for Sale issue, because we're shipping foreign exchange reserves to other oil-producing countries, the Middle East, and top producers increasingly are in this hemisphere: Canada, Mexico, Venezuela. Hugo Chavez, a clear enemy of the United States. And offshore drilling. I've argued for years that oil and natural gas are abiotic. that they're not dinosaur soup. It's not the case all the dinosaurs herded to Saudi Arabia and died in a big heap at the end of the Mesozoic era.
That is so ridiculous. You know, you wonder if people really believe that. That's what I learned when I was in college, you know. And they told us so many lies. I mean, how many dinosaurs does it take to make, you know, 100 million barrels of oil?
I know. How many dinosaurs does it take to make a barrel of oil? The oil is produced in the mantle of the Earth on a continual basis. It comes through cracks in the deep bedrock, and it pools in sedimentary rock where our petrogeologists assume the oil was created. Now, we take a look at countries like Brazil. Brazil now has got these massive deep water finds of oil off in the Atlantic, and Brazil's finding oil at depths that are as deep as Mount Everest is high. There's no dinosaurs, Dr. Sand, that were down at that depth or any other living material that could have produced the oil. Now, at the same time, the Obama administration, for the environmentalists, the leftist control, the desire to punish the U.S. industrially, and we're just too wealthy, we use too much of the Earth's resources, we're not allowing... The Obama administration has not yet allowed the offshore drilling that Congress voted at the end of the Bush administration. So we're going to allow Russia and China to work with Cuba and drill about 50 miles offshore of Key West, as authorized by Jimmy Carter, in giving back Gulf water rights to China. But we won't allow U.S. companies to drill offshore, and this is a severe limitation on the ability of the United States. If we drilled offshore, if we explored Alaska, including Anwar, we're finding deep earth in the continental United States, huge resources of natural gas at levels under 3 miles below the surface of the earth. We're finding the ability to have new techniques of fractioning, the breaking up the shale and other resources to bring out natural gas and oil in formations like the Bakken Formation up in Montana and North Dakota, where we have trillions of barrels of oil and natural gas that are recoverable in the United States. If we started exploring these resources within 10 years, we wouldn't have to be dependent on foreign oil. To 60%, we can say, let's go 50%, let's go 40%. Let's get down to 10% dependent on foreign oil. And that would be a tremendous saving in foreign exchange reserves going to countries, many of whom are our natural enemies, like Venezuela.
But they don't want the solution. They want the problem so that they can export our wealth to the oil-producing countries. And many of these, of course, we're financing so that they can become our best competitors. And rather than developing our own natural resources, they use the threat to the wildflowers up at the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve. My goodness, you wouldn't want to disturb those beautiful wildflowers because they only exist for, you know, a few weeks a year. The rest of the time it's all under ice. But they show us the pictures, you know, in the summertime, you know, when that short little period when there are a few wildflowers there. And then, of course, they use that as a justification for not allowing us to drill. Well, let's go to Paul, who's calling in from Oklahoma. Hi, Paul. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. As far as the stuff that I've read, the oldest stuff that I can think of that mentions a new world order and that, you know, saying that it's a good thing, and some of the stuff I have that goes to, I have one that's from 1870, but that's British Israel, and people might not like that, but you know, the British Israel.
Paul, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, my question is, what part does, Britain and have with the globalism, the New World Order, the United States? And like I said, they're the ones that said for a long time the New World Order, but I think it's a good thing.
All right, fine. Well, certainly, what part does England play in this globalist agenda?
Well, if you take a look at Great Britain right now, Great Britain is largely a socialist country, and the socialists in Great Britain are very much in favor of going completely into the European Union. I'm sure there'll be a move in the next few years to eliminate the pound altogether and go to the euro, even in Great Britain. Gordon Brown has been clearly a globalist. Gordon Brown, in fact, my chapter 8, I cite Gordon Brown saying we need a global New Deal. In other words, not just redistribute the wealth in the United States to poor within the United States, but globally distribute U.S. wealth to third world countries. So Great Britain is very much on the side of the left in globalism right now. And Dr. Chen, I devote a third of the book to the solution, saying that the Tea Parties, what we're seeing going on in the town hall meetings, is the rise potentially of a 21st century American patriots who are going to say no to this global New Deal. And these are very important movements, as are the movements on the 9th and 10th Amendments. I mean, the 9th and 10th Amendments to the Constitution specify that power is not specifically delegated to the federal government. The Constitution are reserved to the states and to the people. So various states, including Oklahoma, are passing 9th and 10th Amendment resolutions. Running for governor in Oklahoma, Randy Brogdon, a state senator, I think is in the lead on the 9th and 10th Amendment movement. And these are ways in which states, I think, increasingly will say no to the federal government. Keep your highway money to the federal government. Keep your welfare money. And these states will say, look, we're not going to provide generous benefits to illegal immigrants. We're going to reduce taxes and encourage people who live here who want to create small businesses. And this movement, I think, has the potential to be a direct threat to Barack Obama and those in the White House right now who want to ignore the Constitution and expand the authority of the federal government without limits.
And I certainly concur, and I think that all across America we see great candidates coming forward. Judge Roy Moore is going to be running for the governorship in Alabama. Certainly Alan Quist is running for Congress, I believe, up in Minnesota or Wisconsin. Like Minnesota, I think, is where he lives. And we see great candidates coming down the line. This next year is going to be vitally important if there are enough people. And I believe there's a growing number of people who are suddenly beginning to find out we have a constitution. It is the law of our land. The David Rockefellers and the Barack Obamas and the Zygmunt Brzezinskis and the George Soroses of the world hate the constitution because it prevents the establishment of an authoritarian ruling class. They want to be the rulers not only of our country but of the entire world. This is an effort to bring about a world government under a ruling elite. Would you concur with that view?
100%, Dr. Stan. I agree with you entirely.
And, of course, I think that what we need to do, everybody out there in the listening audience, has got to say, I'm going to get involved, and I'm going to get involved not next year when the elections come up. I'm going to start getting involved now, and I'm going to start getting the information out, and I'm going to let people begin to understand what is going on. And we have people in positions of power who hate America, who hate freedom, and, of course, they believe in the all-powerful state. Well, Jerry, what sort of response do you think? You mentioned that your book is doing very, very well. Were there any other major points that we should bring out?
One or two, Dr. Stan. In the book, I give to people points of rallying and issues. Just let me sort out one or two. I agree with Ron Paul. The Federal Reserve is not a government institution. It's a private bank. It charges the United States for the issuing of our money. We pay interest on our money being issued by the Federal Reserve. If the Federal Reserve refuses to allow itself to be audited, won't even let the American people have a transparent look at what the Federal Reserve is doing, then let's shut it down. the Treasury can issue the money. Under John Kennedy, the Treasury issued its own currency with those bills with the red seal. The interest rates could be set either by the Treasury or the market. LIBOR is set by the market. And I agree, let's eliminate the Federal Reserve, the IRS. This is the first year in 2009 where half of the people in the United States will not pay any income tax. In fact, 20% of Americans will not only not pay any income tax, they're going to get a check back on a rebate, if you can believe it. How can you get a rebate when you don't pay any income tax? Well, it's the earned income tax credit. They don't make enough, they get a check back, despite the fact they haven't paid any income tax. Now, when half of the people are paying income tax and half are not, it's a completely unstable situation, because the half not paying will simply vote in more social welfare benefits, which increase our negative net worth, and there's no way we'll ever be able to pay. We've got to go to some tax system that is not dependent on income tax, which I think is unconstitutional and shouldn't be our basis of taxation. And another issue, just one more, if our dollar as a fiat currency is losing value worldwide and we're having an international monetary fund alternative created with President Obama's active involvement, well, let's get off the fiat currency. Let's start with the international currency. Maybe we could introduce a gold-backed dollar in the international setting as a first step. I mean, I outline in America for Sale these kind of concrete proposals that the Tea Party movements, the town hall meetings, can take up as causes to pursue the agenda that we need to get back to constitutional limited government. And the principles of the Constitution, which don't include printing money in a fiat sense, do not include a central bank. Let's eliminate the central bank. Let's get rid of the fiat currency. And let's return to a situation in which Americans can say, we don't need the Federal Reserve. We don't need the Internal Revenue Service. Let's get back to constitutional principles of fiscal management.
I agree with you totally. I mean, they're talking about something like $149 billion in bonuses for the people in the banking industry. This is absurd. Why are the people working within the large banks, you know, suddenly going to get all this money? Well, of course, they're being subsidized by the Federal Reserve System. We have to, of course, say that if a bank is too big to fail, then it should be simply seized, broken up, and sold in smaller components. But these major banks are controlling our nation. They're controlled by globalists, and their goal is the destruction of America as we know it. Our guest, Dr. Jerry Carsey. Well, Jerry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program. It's been fascinating. As always, I enjoy it, and I'm sure our listeners did.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
We know America is changing, but most of the changes that are taking place seem to be designed to take away our freedom. And what can you do to remedy the current situation? Well, you can become informed, and one of the best ways to become informed is to subscribe to Republic Magazine, because that magazine provides the information that's suppressed in most other news magazines. If you want to oppose the effort to establish a one-world government, if you want to preserve freedom here in the United States and throughout the world, I suggest you subscribe to Republic Magazine, and you can do that by calling 1-800-873-1620. That's 800-873-1620, or access their website at www.republicmagazine.com. That's republicmagazine.com. I suggest you get extra copies for your family and your friends.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.
Dr. Gorsi basically wrote the book to expose the globalist movement and try to rekindle that flickering flame of freedom that's about to be extinguished. The people, the globalists, want to, of course, extinguish freedom. They want an all-powerful police state under their control, using the military, using their hired mercenaries, certainly using the police force to control the populace, and that's why they're building their so-called detention camps across America. That's why we rejuvenated the Japanese detention camps, and you haven't heard my talk on the planned police state and got the documentation in our syllabus. You need to get it. Now, this is the last evening I'll be announcing that our conference. We'll keep the opportunity to apply to come to the conference going until midnight tonight, or expecting a lot of people from Southern California who will be hearing our Saturday program to sign up. But we are approaching 160 people coming, and I expect a lot more probably within the next 48 hours, but we just have to have a cutoff. So if you're coming, give us a call tonight. You have to have reservations because we're serving lunch. That's on October the 25th here on the north shore of the Monterey Bay at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We're going to have a great lineup of speakers. And so if you want to come, well, you've still got this evening to call us at 1-800-544-8927. This is the time when, of course, you need to commit yourself in this battle, this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation under God can long survive. So basically, if you'd like to come, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. And of course, we want to mention we're going to be reprinting my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need a weapon to educate others. There's no better way to do that. And certainly the book ordinarily retails for $12.95, but you can get 60 copies for $149.95. plus shipping, so that's really less than $250 a copy, and you can sell them, you can give them away, you can give them as Christmas presents, you can lend them. But we need to get people to understand the true nature of the battle we're engaged in, who is really behind this globalist movement, because you're not going to hear it from our conservative leaders, you're not going to hear it from the liberal leaders, you're not going to hear it from our church leaders. Because, of course, many of them have far more fear of government and certainly want to complete their building projects much more than they want to try to save America and the foundations of liberty, which are here in this country, for where the spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. But why we're losing our liberty? Because the spirit of the Lord is no longer with America. We've allowed them to take God out of our schools and prayer out of our schools. and the Tenth Commandment out of our schools, and that, of course, and then we wonder why we have states of lawlessness and why we have more people in prison in the United States today than any other nation in the world, why one in every 33 American adults is in prison, probation or parole. But we never mention that, do we? We wouldn't want to alarm the people just yet. Well, Sydney, our number 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. You must understand they're poisoning our children. They keep talking about, 86 children have died. Children are dying of swine flu. Ladies and gentlemen, two-thirds of the children have died, you know, have other serious illnesses, at least two-thirds of them. So we're talking about less than 30 American children have died. They keep emphasizing the children as they destroy the lives of our children. One in every six American children has a learning disability or a neurodevelopmental abnormality, Asperger's disease, ADD, ADHD, and they know what they're doing. And we need to take up the cry, why have they destroyed our children? One in every nine children has asthma. You don't see it in the Amish children, why now one in every 50 or 60 boys has autism? They've destroyed their lives, and of course they live in their own world, and they've done it intentionally. And if they'll destroy children, what will they do to our people? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you listen to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend William Grigg. William, how are you tonight?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing pretty well. I did tweak my knee yesterday while I was out jogging, but apart from that, I'm doing a lot better than I have in recent months.
Well, now, don't you get yourself hurt, because William Gregg's going to be coming down here next weekend to be one of the speakers at our Sunday conference, a whole day on the 25th. And so you're all prepared and ready to come?
Yes, I am.
All right,
looking
fine.
Looking forward to it.
All right, fine. Well, we're looking forward to having you. Well, what are we going to be talking about tonight?
There are a number of things I think that would be worthwhile as topics of discussion having to do with the full-orbed transformation of our country into what could be considered a corporatist oligarchy, and the fact that this is happening so rapidly, the consolidation of power and the putting of the ornamental touches on this grand edifice of collectivist tyranny. It's really happening quite quickly, and it's going to accelerate as the economy gets worse. But I just have to take a moment here and talk about this really bizarre spectacle of the White House Communications Director, Anita Dunn, making reference to two of her favorite philosophers, one of them being Mother Teresa, who wasn't merely a philosopher. She was a humanitarian. She was somebody who was, actually it's an insult to call her humanitarian, because humanitarianism is the Enlightenment's counterfeit of Christian compassion and charity. She was somebody who put that into practice, whatever her other failings as a human being, and of course each of us has a full assortment of those. She was somebody who exhausted her life serving the poorest and the most outcast of people. But the other person invoked by Anita Dunn as one of her philosophers and political role models is Mao Zedong. I'm just trying to imagine the torrential outpouring of focused indignation that would ensue if a White House communications director identified Adolf Hitler as one of his or her role models or chief political philosophers. That's, of course, something that's not going to happen, because Adolf Hitler, quite properly, is in universal disrepute, except for among a handful of inbred malcontent and fringe-dwelling lunatics. But the thing about Adolf Hitler is that as murderous as he was and as tyrannical as he really was a piker compared to Mao Zedong. Mao Zedong, by the wrecking of R.J. Rummel, who's probably the authority on the subject, is the most prolific mass murderer in history. Just within the last 4 or 5 years, R.J. Rummel, who's the inventor of this dismal science of democide, the mass murder of people by government, recalculated his statistics in the 20th century based on new materials that are coming out of China, and it appears that Mao Zedong managed to dethrone Joseph Stalin as the 20th century's most prolific mass murderer, which is no small feat. Granted, Mao had a much larger canvas upon which to paint in blood, China being a much more populous nation than Russia, but it still is worth pointing out that he killed, that is to say, that the regime he created with his support and at his instructions, working through the oligarchy he represented and the ruling apparatus of the Communist Party, killed over 100 million people.
And I really think that's so accurate. You know, we always hear about the 6 million Jews who died in Germany, but you asked the people about the Great Hunger, where certainly between 1958 and 1962, they systematically starved to death probably between 40 and 44 million people. You ask people about that, their eyes will glaze over. They've never heard of it. How could you possibly conceal Mao's murder, starvation to death of between 40 and 44 million people between 58 and 62? Well, it's wonderful what you can do when you control the media. William, go right ahead.
It's really interesting that Miss Dunn, by way of exculpating herself for citing Mao Zedong as one of her favorite philosophers, made mention of the fact that there are plenty of people on the Republican side who cited Mao Zedong in terms of strategy. And that, of course, is meant to invoke this sort of balance of terror-type mutual assured destruction pact that exists between the two branches of the establishment party. They're both pursuing the same objective, which is consolidation of power in Washington in the interest of advancing the global rule of this semi-submerged power elite of which they're a part. And so both of them will invoke more or less the same principles in pursuit of the same type of objectives. They just differ pretty much in terms of the specific appeal they make to different constituencies. But by way of defending herself, she said the Mao quote is one I picked up from the late Republican strategist Lee Atwater from something I read in the late 1980s, so I hope I don't get my progressive friends mad at me. That's something she said to CNN. Yep. Now think about that for a second. They'd be more angry with her for quoting Lee Atwater than they would be angry with her for quoting Mao Zedong. That really tells you everything you need to know about the priorities of the so-called progressives in the Democratic Party. And then there's a Democrat Party-aligned so-called watchdog group called Media Matters for America, that's David Brock's organization, points out that Newt Gingrich, who's a contributor to Fox News, quoted Mao as follows in a 1995 profile in Roll Call magazine: "War is politics with blood. Politics is war without blood." Now, of course, that illustrates something that you and I and a number of other people have all said about Newt Gingrich, which is that the guy's no part of a conservative. If conservative is defined as somebody who understands values and advances the American concept of liberty protected by law and the limitation of government by a written constitution, he's somebody who's all about the accumulation of the exercise of power. And then Karl Rove, who's also, of course, a contributor to Fox News and a longtime advisor to Republican presidential campaigns and presidents, wrote in a December 2008 Wall Street Journal op-ed column that President Bush, quote, encouraged me to read a Mao biography, which isn't the same type of a thing necessarily as quoting Mao Zedong as a source of political wisdom. I mean, I've read biographies of Mao. I do not consider Mao to be a source of political wisdom, which is what Anita Dunn was talking about. She's talking about her favorite political philosophers. But the fact that this is something that escaped the type of widespread censure that would have happened if she had been, say, a Republican White House communications director, favorably citing Benito Mussolini.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Gregg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, certainly our guest this evening, William Gregg, talking about a woman having to do with press relationships at the White House, who had said, you know, her two favorite philosophers were Mother Teresa and Chairman Mao. What people do not understand is that Chairman Mao was one of the greatest murderers of all time. But what they do not understand about Chairman Mao is he did not win the Chinese Revolution. Mm-hmm. It was the American State Department that handed him China, certainly on a platter, because the American State Department cut off all, put an arms embargo on General Chiang Kai-shek, who was the opponent, who was trying to establish a democratic society, a representative government there in China and unify the country. And our State Department did not want that. They did not want a unified, effective China because that would interfere with America's dominance of the world. So they put an arms embargo on General Chiang Kai-shek so he couldn't purchase weapons anywhere in the world. He couldn't even get delivery on the weapons he already bought and paid for on Okinawa and the other Pacific Islands. And Congress kept voting for money to be given to chairman to the nationalist Chinese, and the State Department simply ignored the Congress of the United States and kept the loaded ships up with weapons, but they kept them in port in San Francisco and in Los Angeles for a year and a half. And finally, when they were forced to release the ships and the ships arrived in China with the weapons and they unpacked the rifles, the rifles didn't have any bolts in the rifles and were useless. This did not happen by accident. The United States State Department brought communism to China. Now, if you doubt what I say, we have the Senate Committee report on that. Senate Committee, an internal subversion. We'll be glad to provide it to anybody, or simply I quote from it in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You must understand, it was not that Chairman Mao was a great philosopher, a military genius. There was the elite liberal globalists, and I'm talking about the certainly both Republican and Democrat, who controlled the Council on Foreign Relations, controlled of the American State Department, that brought Chairman Mao to power. But I bet there's not one in a thousand liberals or conservatives today who really understand what happened at that time. Go ahead.
By way of putting sort of a capstone on the observation that you just made, Dr. Stan, it's important to recognize, this is something you've mentioned before as well, that when David Rockefeller, who's been referred to by many people, himself included, as the chairman of this ruling establishment, longtime director of the Council on Foreign Relations, co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, somebody who's deeply involved in all the unseen but very palpable machinations of the power elite, visited China in 1973. He came back and he wrote an op-ed column for the New York Times in which he referred to what he called the social experiment under Mao Zedong as one of the most successful in human history. And so you're dealing here, once again, as you point out, with somebody who was propped up and whose political fortunes were propelled by this brotherhood of darkness, this unseen, sometimes shadowy power elite. You can view it through a dark glass, darkly, as it will, as the scriptural language would put it. You can make out little bits and pieces of it. You can certainly see their impact on current affairs. One of the biggest impacts they had was on that hapless country of China, which really, as you point out, was delivered into the hands of this tiny ruling communist oligarchy by the West, by the United States State Department in particular. And Mao, of course, is somebody who is lauded as the architect of a revolution that he really didn't create, that it's just amazing to me how frequently people come to worship somebody on account of the fact that they acquire and exercise power. The same thing's been true of Fidel Castro. He was brought to power by that same power elite. He's been sustained in power by, first and foremost, the power elite's counterparts over in the former Soviet Union, but also with the help of people here in the American establishment as well. And he wasn't any genius when it came to political organization or tactics. He was not the Robin Hood, the Sierra Maestra, as he was described by Herbert Matthews in the New York Times. He was a small, bored thug with grand ambitions who had been somewhat marinated in Marxist ideology and was useful for the purposes of this power elite. He had a smaller canvas on which to work his depraved magic than Mao Zedong, but he was pursuing the same objectives, and he's been valorized in the same way by the same group of people. But once again, I think it's interesting to speculate how things would have turned out if a White House press spokesman under a Republican administration had had anything good to say about somebody who's considered a right-wing dictator. I mean, you don't even have to go to the reducto ad Hitlerium in order to make this point. Of course, Hitler is somebody nobody is going to invoke as a political strategist or philosopher, but let's say that somebody had invoked a far more benign in this case being a relative term, a far more benign dictator like, say, Pinochet of Chile, or General Francisco Franco of Spain, who ran an admittedly authoritarian government, but helped to hold back the Axis during World War II, and as Eric von Quayne-Levine pointed out in his book Leftism Revisited about 20 years ago, it was really the intervention of the government of Spain that ended up rescuing several hundred thousand Jews, tens of thousands of Jews, maybe as many as 100,000 from the Axis. Well, of course, you have the Vatican rescuing Jews. You have the Swiss, much derided Swiss, rescuing Jews as well, but the government of Francisco Franco, which is not a government I'd like to live under, whatever, once again, the shortcomings, failings, and outrages committed by that government, they did rescue Jews from Hitler. They maintained their point on the continent at a time when the Axis coveted Gibraltar. I mean, Adolf Hitler at one point went in to try to intimidate Franco into handing him Gibraltar. This was at a time when Spain was patching itself up after a civil war that had killed countless Spaniards. It was really a sort of a test run for World War II. They were ripped to shreds. Their economy was in rubble. Their country was still reeling from the bloodshed. Franco basically had nothing but his own will to prevent Hitler from taking Gibraltar, and he just basically wore him down. After that, four-and-a-half-hour interview, I think it was, Hitler emerged so frustrated he wanted to tear something apart. And he remarked to one of his generals that he would rather have his teeth pulled than talk to that man again. And it's very easy to imagine what would have happened, if you want to take a look at it in the light of the geography. If they would have had Gibraltar, they could have turned the Mediterranean into an Axis lake, and the world would have turned out differently. But the thing is, if somebody, a press spokesman for a White House administration in Republican hands, had cited Francisco Franco as a favorite political philosopher, that's all we'd be talking about right now. This indignation industry with its thousand tongues and myriad keyboards would be talking about what an outrage it is that they have exhumed and tried to rehabilitate this awful, despicable, tyrannical mass murderer. And of course, Franco, if you take a look at the type of regime he presided over, compare it with that of Mao Zedong, Franco's regime is a veritable paradise of individual liberty compared to Mao Zedong's rule in its mildest, and of course it was never mild. I mean, Mao Zedong's regime was hell on earth for people who lived under it. It was, of course, seized upon by occasional frenzies of outright bloodletting like the Cultural Revolution, and you mentioned, of course, the engineered famine. But even when they didn't have some kind of a campaign going on, deliberately intended to make life particularly miserable for people, it was still a miserable place to live. But because it's a large country, it was powerful, and it was put in the hands of the communists by the power elite, Mao Zedong is looked upon as somebody perfectly acceptable, whereas Francisco Franco was treated as if he were a demon from the bottomless pit of the inferno, in large measure because he held back the advancing tide of communism during the 1930s. That's the reason, I think, the primary reason why his brand of authoritarianism is in such bad repute, and outright totalitarianism is something that is lauded. But that's just a really good example of how radical this group of people in Washington are, and how we're seeing sort of the tardy rehabilitation and the exaltation of of the really hintermost elements of the far left in American politics under Obama in a way that I really hadn't expected, because Mr. Obama is not really that type of activist. Granted, he's an Alinskyite, so-called community organizer, and as he pointed out in a radio interview, the job of a community organizer is to bring about what he called redistributive change. And of course, that's Marx's language. That's the use of government to bring about a social revolution and the redistribution of wealth under the supposedly benign supervision of a presiding vanguard. But it seems to me that he's attracted, or that more likely the people behind him were putting his cabinet together, have specifically selected some really, really radical people, perhaps to make him look more moderate. I'm not sure. But the fact that people like that have gravitated toward Obama's regime, once again, take a look at the case of Kevin Jennings, the Safe Schools czar. Here's a guy who was with the GLSEN network, the Gay Lesbian Student Education Network, and he's from Massachusetts. I actually have been watching his career for about 15 years. He came to Appleton, Wisconsin when I was living there and put on a presentation about the so-called Safe Schools Initiative, and it was all about legitimizing the idea that young people from the earliest ages in public school life, you know, preschool, kindergarten, and elementary school, should be actively indoctrinated in the notion that they are fully sexual individuals, and that there are among them a certain percentage of people who are going to be pursuing alternate lifestyles of sexuality, and that this should be the part of the curriculum as far down into the public school ranks as preschool. He's the Safe Schools czar. I mean, basically he wants to use the schools to corrupt and adulterate the minds of youth, and he's the person put in charge of this mission.
Well, you know, as I see these things unfolding, I can't help but wonder, maybe this is all intentional, to make Barack Obama look so, so extreme. That, of course, a very left-wing Republican will be able to replace him.
Yeah.
Or perhaps, and even more frightening to me, especially with what has happened as far as his selection for the Nobel Peace Prize, I think we should pray for his safety and his life. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. Go right ahead, William.
Well, Dr. Stan, I would...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Do
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
You know, and I think that closed the nominations just a few weeks after he became the President of the United States. Why would a man who's actually increasing the war in Afghanistan, who sent additional troops to Afghanistan, who still has our troops over in Iraq, why would he be given the Nobel Peace Prize? And certainly he's going along with increasing the tempo of war in Pakistan. There are all sorts of possibilities and threats towards taking violent action against Pakistan. Why would Barack Obama be given the Nobel Peace Prize unless, of course, my fear, and I think William shares this, and I think people who look at the tapestry of what's unfolding say something else is going on, and I really fear for Barack Obama's life. I'm surprised to hear that William is always is two steps ahead of me, thinking exactly the same sort of thing. So you pick up the thought that there might very well be these wicked and evil men who killed John Fitzgerald Kennedy in November of 1973 could possibly be thinking of doing the same thing again. But go right ahead.
It seems that there is this pool of people. There's this constant supply of lone, eccentric patsies, you know, lone nuts, the lone gunmen that can be drawn upon from time to time to carry out missions of this sort. And Gore Vidal, who's somebody who knew the Kennedys, he was raised in Washington, D.C., in a very elite home. He was the grandson of the Senator Gore who brought Oklahoma into the Union. He was the son of the founder of TWA Airlines. Went on to become a novelist of a rather unfortunate sort. I wouldn't recommend reading any of his early novels, although his historical novels, such as Burr and Lincoln and Empire and some of the others are very good reading, and some of his essays about what's happened to the United States in the last 10 or 15 years are very much worth reading. He's somebody who misses the old republic for what his other transgressions, which are substantial, to one side. He's a pretty good analyst of the corruption of the United States into a metastasizing collectivist empire. But he was the one who suggested just a couple of weeks ago in an interview with the British press that it would not be beyond the realm of possibility, given the utility of Barack Obama as a symbol rather than as an executor of policy. That's the important thing to focus on, that some lone gunman could be arranged to intersect, to have his path intersect with that of Barack Obama. Pray God that it's not so. I mean, and once again, just to think about it in human terms, I don't like the guy as a public figure. I don't know the man as a person, but he is the father of two lovely daughters. He's a husband and apparently a good and faithful husband to his wife. And in spite of the fact that, as a politician, he champions policies that are not only wrong-headed but catastrophic, in my opinion, just on a human level, I would prefer to see that he not be harmed. The same thing, of course, is true with George W. Bush. The same thing is true with everybody, including Bill Clinton, somebody I helped to impeach. But the thing is, taking at the level of symbolism and taken at the level of opportunism, that would be disastrous for the prospects for some kind of restoration of constitutional order in this country, because I honestly believe that if this were to happen, if something were to happen to Barack Obama, that we would actually see the levers being pulled, the trap door being sprung, and we would plummet immediately into some type of overt garrison state. Right now we're seeing little hints and intimations of what happened in Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago, where he had this crowd control technology that had been used in Iraq being turned not only against protesters, but against common pedestrians that had nothing to do with the protests that were going on at the G20 summit. That's a little bit of a foretaste of what we can expect if you have that particular scenario play out, or if you have a pandemic, or if you have widespread disasters, mass terrorism, if we end up in a war and a simultaneous economic collapse, and if we have a war with Iran, the economic collapse that we're experiencing right now will gather momentum and accelerate. But in terms of the way that this conscious effort has been made to invest Obama with so much historic significance and to make him a figure transcending politics of our contemporary time, it looks to me like there is a deliberate effort to set him up as somebody who will be thought of as a martyr. And the fact that he's not a very good politician, not a very good administrator, not very good at getting legislation through, suggests that his utility might be something more symbolic, and that's why I fear that the martyrdom scenario might be plausible.
Well, I fear that you may very well be right, and so I would admonish our listeners to pray for Barack Obama's, first of all, to his conversion to Christianity, because
Amen.
I do not believe he's a Christian. We should pray that for all men. In fact, when you don't like somebody I've found through the years, the best thing to do is pray for them. I feel better, and who knows how the Lord will react. Many times he does intervene. And, of course, that's Kate Smith on God Bless America. And, of course, when she sang that song, it was an entirely different America. Mm-hmm. It was America that that I could be proud of. It was the greatest country in the world. It held high moral standards. It certainly reflected the ability of a nation to come together to fight a common oppressor. It was a wonderful time, remembrance of things past. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest as always on Friday evening, William Grigg. And before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get to your blog site, how they can get your books, how they can, of course, listen to your radio program.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. My blog and my radio program are both called Pro Libertate. The blog is found at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedom in Our Time is spelled as one compound word, freedominourtime.blogspot.com. And the Pro Libertate radio program is broadcast from 6 o'clock till 7 o'clock Mountain Time, or 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock Pacific. 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock Mountain Time is also 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock Central on the Liberty News Radio Network at libertynewsradio.com. And we're also available on a small but growing number of terrestrial stations. Go to libertynewsradio.com and you can get a list of the stations to see if one is in the area of any given member of your audience. And it's also available, of course, by the World Wide Web, and the programs are all archived. I'm on for an hour a day, 5 days a week. At some point, God willing, in the next several months I'll expand it to 2 hours. That's something we're talking about. It's all a question of how many hours of the day I have to work with. But Liberty News Radio has been up and running now for about a year, and it's a venture that I'm very proud to be part of, and I urge everybody to listen to all the programs on that network and to let people know about it so we can help it to grow. I don't agree with every host, I don't agree with every opinion, but we don't have to agree with every host or every opinion to be edified at least by something that's said on just about every program there. To get my most recent book, Liberty and Eclipse, we can go to willgrigg.com, and you can go to the blog as well at freedominourtime.blogspot.com, and at the end of every essay, there's a hyperlink which will take the reader directly to amazon.com to purchase it from Amazon. I'm still in talks with some people about doing a second expanded edition of the book. The first edition is almost sold out, and I'm trying to figure out what would be the best way to proceed. So hopefully within the next several months we'll have some news on that front. And as soon as I do, I'll let you know and I'll let your audience know.
Okay, fine. Well, Chris, if I could suggest, you know, what I've done is I've actually gone to my listeners and said, look, you know, you can get a case of my books at a ridiculously low price, because I have to negotiate it with the printer, and we've in the past been able to get a number of people be willing to buy the book at a very low price, but enough so left over so that I would be able to, with 50 or so people subscribing, to get the book printed literally for nothing. I would have the copies. They would have the copies to distribute, and we'll talk to when you're down here, but it has worked out, and certainly it is the funding of everything today. Things are tight, and certainly, but it's an excellent book. And what we need are weapons to use, and it's an excellent weapon in this ideological battle, this struggle for the survival of Christian civilization. So why don't you just go right ahead and pick up the story? Will you have some copies of your book with you when you get down here?
Yes, I should. I plan on bringing a quantity of that and some other of the books that I've published.
All right, fine. So you'll have a half a table there, and you can display them, and you'll be there with Dr. Kathleen Albrecht, and I hope you'll get lots of traffic. I'm sure you will. We got close to 160, and we probably will have more than that before the time is up. Anyway, go right ahead with your story this evening.
Well, I wanted to talk just a little bit about something that you probably mentioned, Dr. Stan, and that many of your readers have probably picked up on. It's something that I've been talking about on my radio show as well, and that is this story that was just recently unearthed from some Internet archive somewhere that was published in the June 27, 2004 Sunday Standard in Nairobi, Kenya. Of course, Nairobi is the most important city in Kenya, And the headline of the story was, Kenyan-born Obama all set for U.S. Senate. And the first paragraph reads, Kenyan-born U.S. Senate hopeful Barack Obama appeared set to take over the Illinois Senate seat after his main rival, Jack Ryan, dropped out of the race on Friday night amid a furor over lurid sex cove allegations. Now, this is significant for a couple of reasons. The first of which, of course, that this identifies repeatedly Barack Obama as being born in Kenya. And in many of the recent stories about the Nobel Peace Prize, there have been references to the fact that many people in Kenya, including some people of influence, have referred to Barack Obama's Nobel Peace Prize win as a hometown win for Kenya. And this, of course, is immensely significant because there is a whole contingent of people here in this country who believe that Barack Obama is not qualified as a natural-born United States citizen, as the offspring of American parents and born in the United States. He doesn't meet that set of qualifications in order to be president. And this group of people, of course, are derisively referred to as birthers. And there is plenty of reason for speculation, and there's plenty of reason for skepticism and for misgivings about this subject. And this recently unearthed article is just one example of the fact that until very recently, probably no later than about 2007, it was assumed by many people, both in Africa and in the United States, that Barack Obama had been born in Kenya, that he was somebody who represented something of an immigrant success story here in the United States. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because it's just sort of interesting how it seems as if this whole thing is coalescing at a time when, once again, there's been this visible effort to try to accentuate a mythological image of Barack Obama as somebody who transcends our contemporary concerns and is somebody who already belongs to the ages. And if you take a look once again at his roster of accomplishments, there are no accomplishments. I mean, this is something which is admitted even by some of the people who support the idea of giving him the Nobel Peace Prize, not merely as an affirmative action bauble, but I think as something of an incentive. I mean, that's the way it's being described by a lot of the defenders here. Look, maybe he'll live up to the Nobel Peace Prize. We give it to him now, then maybe he will reach such a stature that he would be worthy of being a Nobel laureate. Well, there are two things to say about that. The first of which is that there's no way that once somebody has something in hand like that, that he's going to live up to the expectations that are attendant to that type of a prize. But secondly, given the history of the Nobel Peace Prize, I'm really not inclined to think of it as something which embodies or symbolizes the best in terms of political aspirations or the best moral accomplishments. Granted, there had been some worthy recipients. I mean, Mother Teresa, I mentioned her earlier in this program, was a Nobel Peace Prize winner. But so was Nasser Arafat. So was Kofi Annan. And I just want to take a second to talk about Kofi Annan here. That's a really particularly interesting example because he was given the Nobel Peace Prize in 2000 on behalf of the UN peacekeeping initiatives of the 1990s. And that's something that's sort of irony cubed because the peacekeeping division of the United Nations, the military element of the United Nations, was Mr. Annan's portfolio back in the early 1990s. He was the head of the peacekeeping division when the Rwandan genocide took place, and that was a 101-day orgy of mass murder that claimed as many as 1.2 million lives. Most of them were ended amid an onslaught of machetes. But what had happened is that the peacekeepers had been sent to Rwanda to disarm the population as part of a peace accord that had been worked out to end the civil war between the Hutu and Tutsi ethnic groups in Rwanda. And this was in the context of an international war involving Burundi. There were people with the Tutsi rebellion who were operating out of Burundi and trying to overthrow the Hutu government. These two groups have been really at daggers drawn with each other for over a century. The Belgian colonial government saw fit to put the Tutsi in charge of the Hutus because they considered the Tutsi under the ethnographic or ethnological doctrines that prevailed in the late 19th century, that the Tutsi were seen as more European and thus supposedly more advanced than the Hutus. I mean, the Tutsi are taller, they tend to be willowy, they tend to be more I don't know, fair complexion is the right expression. I mean, they tend to be about my color, my shade of brown, as opposed to the dark brown of the Hutu. I'm actually built more like a Hutu, but I have the complexion of a Tutsi. But the point is that the Belgians put the Tutsis in power, and that, of course, resulted in animosity toward the Tutsis by the Hutu, and for over a century, the Hutu and Tutsi have been at each other's throats, and from time to time, one of them will come to power, and the others will suffer. And this reached a peak in the 1990s, where the Hutus were in power, and the Tutsis were trying to overthrow the government, and the UN intervened, set in a peacekeeping force that was led by Lieutenant Romeo Dallaire, Lieutenant Colonel Romeo Dallaire from Canada. It was chiefly Belgian in composition. But in 1993, they were administering a peace agreement that required the disarmament of everybody but the government of Rwanda, which is problematic because at that time the government of Rwanda, under the Hutus, was planning to slaughter all of the Tutsi. That would have meant several million people being killed. And Romeo Dallaire developed intelligence that this slaughter was impending, and he sent a fax to New York to the UN headquarters in January of 1994, telling them that the Hutu government was going to slaughter the disarmed Tutsis, and he wanted to raid the government arms caches. He wanted to disarm the government rather than disarm the people. If you're going to be disarming anybody in order to prevent a genocide, that's the way you do it. You take the weapons out of the hands of the government. And his supervisor denied him permission to raid the arms caches and told him to share his intelligence with the same Hutu government that was planning the massacre. And his supervisor was Kofi Annan. And so what Lieutenant Dallaire did was he ignored the order. He didn't raid the cache, but he didn't provide his intelligence to the Hutu government. He had to stand by and watch, you know, hundreds of thousands of people being killed and see thousands of men under his command being slaughtered. And he came back from Rwanda after that experience. He descended into alcoholism and suicidal depression. And at the same time, his supervisor, Kofi Annan, who presided over this debacle and had abetted, had been an accessory before the fact of genocide, he was promoted to become the UN Secretary General. And then in 1999, there was a special report put out, I believe, by Ingvar Carlsson of Sweden that documented that the UN had detailed advanced knowledge of that impending genocide and that it could have intervened had they been inclined to do so. They could have intervened to the extent of exposing what was going to happen. If they would have exposed what was going to happen, most likely the revelation before the world that that government planned a genocide would at least have deterred some of what happened. And if nothing else, they could at least have stopped disarming the civilians and creating this phony confidence that these people were going to intervene and protect them against the government once their guns had been taken from them, once everything that they had by way of defensive armature had been taken from them. They were supposed to count on the international community as embodied in these blue beret peacekeepers. If the UN had simply let the world know what was going to happen and let the Tutsi flee the country rather than sticking around and simply being slaughtered, something could have been done to mitigate the bloodshed, to abate the frenzy, or to stop it outright. But as the report pointed out, the UN was actively complicit in that genocide. And then a year later, Kofi Annan gets the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, you know, I feel very deeply about that. I keep a lot of newspaper clippings here in my library. And certainly when the genocide was going on, an order went out from the White House to all of the White House officials, do not use the word genocide in reference to what's going on there, because if you use the word genocide, we would be forced to intervene. Now, this came directly from Bill Clinton. I still have the headline. I have the article. And, you know, so we stood by here in the United States knowing what was going on. And then the ultimate in hypocrisy, when Chris Bill Clinton flies to Rwanda after he's been in the office and with a tear in his eye, you know, standing on the tarmac, said, if we'd only known we would have intervened, oh, we feel so bad about it. I mean, you would think that the lightning would come from the sky and strike him dead. Really, they knew exactly what was going on, but the elitists in our country wanted that. Why? Because they hate Christians, and Tutsi were Christians, and they believe in population control. There are too many blacks in the world, and they allowed it to happen. And of course, Kofi Annan, who himself is black, had no loyalty at all to his own people. He was only interested in his own aggrandizement, and he's been very well rewarded for his treachery and betrayal of his fellow countrymen, his fellow blacks, by getting the reward of the Nobel Peace Prize. I wonder what they're going to be rewarding or what they have rewarded Barack Obama for.
Yeah, that's a little bit sobering to contemplate, given the history and pedigree of that award. Do you remember off the top of your head what country Kofi Annan's heritage?
No, I really don't.
Yeah, I can't either. I know that he was educated in Minneapolis, St. Paul. He got a degree from a university there, but I can't remember where he was from originally. But it's interesting. There's an official from the Rwandan government by the name of, I'm scouring my memory here, I believe his name is Patrice Mazimbuka, who spoke at the Cairo International Population Control Conference sponsored by the United Nations in 1994. This was just months after the genocide. Mr. Mazimbuka, I remember the last name, I can't remember the first name. Difficult to forget a name like Mazimbuka, quite frankly. He put on a presentation there at the Cairo Conference where they were talking about post-genocide population management. And what I thought was fascinating here is that the Hutu power genocide in Rwanda had done to that country something on a scope comparable to what happened in Cambodia. We're talking about something between a fifth and a fourth of the population, you know, one-fifth or a quarter of the population of that country had been slaughtered. You know, and this is the sort of slaughter that my Aztec ancestors used to conduct. It was hands-on genocide, where you were ripping open a living body with an edged weapon. It was a dagger in the case of the Aztec priests. It was a machete in the case of the genocide in Rwanda. And behind the people with machetes, there were people with automatic weapons making sure that the victims didn't flee. And so you had a million people being killed in, I think it was 78 days, actually. No, it wasn't 78. It was close to 100 days. And Mazimbuka at this conference in Cairo said, well, you see, we've lost that many people, but we're told that we're still overpopulated. By the United Nations guidelines, we're still overpopulated, and so we have to do something about restraining population growth so as to keep it within the guidelines that have been set by the United Nations. Now, you couple that with the fact that the UN knew what was going to happen there, and the fact that the UN is full to overflowing with eugenicists and people who believe in severe population reduction, there are some really troubling implications that result, you know, such as the idea that perhaps this was a demonstration case of what can happen when a country is designated as one whose population has grown too large. That is an extreme method of bringing them into sustainability. At least that's what was said in Cairo.
Well, you know, it's very difficult for the average American, any rational person, to realize there could really be people who would feel that way. And I will tell you, it took me 10 years of soul-searching and agony before I came to realize that most of what's going on in the world today has to do with population control. And of course, you go to my website, read my population control agenda monograph, look at the pictures of the Georgia Guidestones, and understand the program.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, you know, America is changing, but most of the changes that are taking place seem to be designed to take away our freedom. And what can you do to remedy the current situation? Well, you can become informed, and one of the best ways to become informed is to subscribe to Republic Magazine, because that magazine provides the information that's suppressed in most other news magazines. If you want to oppose the effort to establish a one-world government, if you want to preserve freedom here in the United States and throughout the world, I suggest you subscribe to Republic Magazine, and you can do that by calling 1-800-873-1620. That's 800-873-1620, or access their website at www.republicmagazine.com. That's republicmagazine.com. I suggest you get extra copies for your family and your friends.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Friday edition of the Power Hour. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for caring about your world more than what you see on television. That's right. You are an exclusive group of people who know what is happening in this world. And I mean know what's happening from the core out. And we're going to be talking with Ron McDonald and Dr. Robert Rowan this morning about remedies for that situation. Where do we go? What do we do? It's not enough just to be able to use gold and silver to buy and separate ourselves from the system. There's more to it than that. And we'll talk to Ron McDonald and Dr. Robert Rowan, the authors of the book, They Own It All, Including You. And I think you would, if you do not have this book, you are going to want to have this book. In the news today, of course, if you watched television yesterday, you were glued like everybody else to the screen to watch the balloon boy as he took off somewhere in Colorado and went over the state of Colorado, they thought. We'll talk about that because that was an amazing story. I mean, you talk about a heart grabber. That was one. That really took everybody's attention.
Yeah, I ran home and went to my dad's house and flipped on the TV just to see. I wanted to see the spaceship, you know.
I know.
I was kind of excited for the kid because what six-year-old doesn't want to fly across the sky?
Oh, Josh was rooting for the kid. I hope he's up there. I hope he's up there. Yeah, 10,000 feet sucking in, not very good oxygen up there. But seems the story has a different twist to it. We'll talk about that just a little bit. Only because that is the kind of thing that, boy, television loves. Man, they love that because you cannot move away from a six-year-old that you think has taken off into the sky by mistake. Anyway, in other news on television, of course, it's diversion, diversion, diversion. They don't want you to know that we are in the worst foreclosure period of all time. It is the worst 3 months of all for foreclosure ever in this country. And what does that mean? Well, it means that as a result of that, one bank is pretty much teetering this morning after an announcement that they lost $2.3 billion in bad loans. What is a bad loan, you ask? That's one you don't pay. And why? Because you can't pay. And why? Because they're giving the money away, the jobs away to other countries and other elite so that we can't have it. You suck all the money out of a country, and what happens? It starves, and that's exactly what's taking place. And aside from that, we're also boosting the missile technology of China. Obama says, yeah, why not sell China some of our big missiles? Why not fortify our potential enemies? And that's exactly what's happening. Why is it we always seem to say, yeah, we'll sell it to you, we'll sell it to you? Why? Because we get the money from it. And then, oops, now they're our enemy. Does anybody recall Iraq? Maybe Pakistan? Maybe even Afghanistan? Stop Stroke Program at Cedar Sinai, if you haven't heard about this, there are about 206 people today that are scared to death that they're going to get cancer anytime because they were overdosed on radiation. You think it only happens at a VA hospital? No. It can happen anywhere. Looks like the recession is going to be extended indefinitely, and it looks as though you're going to be probably getting sticker shock at the grocery store when you go to get your groceries sometime soon. It's going to take an additional...